Welcome to Investor Resources with your hosts, Don Creech and Perry Sykes, who both realize that the market doesn't know what keeps you up at night. It doesn't know when you want to retire, and it doesn't know how old you are. The simple truth is, the market doesn't care. But if you care, then you've tuned in at the perfect time. You're listening to Investor Resources, bringing clarity to the confusing world of finance. Here are your hosts of Investor Resources, Don Creech and Perry Sykes.
Well, good afternoon. This is Don Creech.
And this is Perry Sykes. Welcome to the show, everyone.
So we take a look at the week that was, the wild week that was.
Indeed it was.
And try to figure out where to go this next week. But if we go back to the prior week, starting on Tuesday the 13th, that lucky number, that's when it looked like the world was going to come to an end. Slowly at first, because there was news that China's economy was slowing down. That's not good. Second largest economy in the world next to us. And if they're not doing well, that has a tendency to spread. And the week just kind of got a little more depressing until Friday and this last Monday, when it did look like the world was going to come to an end and the market rolled over. And it lasted until Tuesday morning. And all of a sudden, everything's okay.
Hello, we're fine. We're back and we're feeling good. Yeah.
Mr. Market is schizophrenic. If he's not schizophrenic, he's at least bipolar. Not sure when he gets up in the morning which side of the bed is going to find his feet on the floor. We do have some really optimistic earnings news that are going on, as it should be. If we look at earnings season this year, you look at where the starting point is 1 year ago. It's in the depths of the pandemic last year when nobody was going out. I mean, you got to go out to the grocery store, doctor's office, and the pharmacy. You could buy gasoline. But most every other business between home and those locations was closed down.
Yeah, everything was turned off. So
if you're tracking profits from that period of
time. Right.
Yeah, you're tracking profits from that period of time to now, they should be good, and they are. Coming in above expectations with year over year on average is coming in at double, and much better than analysts expected. And tech, even better than that. By the way, this is the Investor Resources Show. It's live. We have a call-in phone number. If you want to talk to us about your portfolio, a particular position that you own in your portfolio, your asset allocation work, which is broad diversification to hope you didn't make a mistake, but also plants anchors everywhere you turn, give us a call here at 800-465-8770. 800-465-8770. And your name will come up in the queue, and we'll take a shot at answering your question and relieving what anxiety you may have. Maybe your friendly neighborhood financial advisor made a recommendation for a change in your portfolio, and you said, I'll think about it. And what you're thinking is this really for me, or is this really for them? And you're not quite sure. Well, one of the things to resolve that is ask to have put in writing that they will always act as a fiduciary in every recommendation and engagement.
That's a big one. That's a big one. Working with a fiduciary, which we are. Don's a accredited investment fiduciary, and so am I. We are fiduciaries from start to finish, top to bottom, left to right. Many advisors are fiduciaries some of the time. But as soon as they get down to investment recommendations, that hat gets put away and the sales hat comes out. And you want to just make sure you know who you're talking to. It's very important. And if you're working with a fiduciary, that means your best interest is above theirs at all times. And that's the way we do business.
And if you don't want to ask that question, the more difficult one actually is, tell me how I pay you for this.
Good question.
Yep. And if you're not writing a check or having a billed statement deducted from your account, you are not dealing with a fiduciary. I mean, we bill clients' accounts, but we give them a statement. They know exactly how much and why and for what period of time. The client pays us to work for them. It's the same thing that happens with your CPA or your attorney. They give you a bill and you pay it because they are working for you. If you're not doing that, they're not working for you. But let's take a look at the economy with the news, the good news that happened this week, in the particularly with tech having a revival. Interest rates dropping too. I mean, I can't remember the last time I saw the 10-year rate at 1.2% per year for 10 years.
That's low. That is low.
We thought maybe 1.25% would be a floor, and it turned out it was a hole in the basement that was still waiting to be found. But is there a reason for that? Well, if the economy's slowing, the answer is yes. And are there any signs that the economy's slowing? And the answer is yes. All you have to do is take a look at some of the core businesses that keep the world running. Let's start with Dr. Copper.
That's a big one.
Dr. Copper is used in virtually anything that takes electricity. Forget about the two space flights this month. Think about something like your cell phone, your refrigerator, all your household appliances, all the electrical system that goes into all the new construction, whether it's residential or commercial, your automobiles, your motorcycles, your flashlights, anything that requires some level of electricity is using copper. Yep, well, Dr. Copper on the stock charts has fallen through the 50 moving average and is bouncing off of the 200. If he's got to stay above that, or it's bad news. Aluminum is another one that's key in construction. Alcoa, as an example, ticker's AA, and same situation. Now it's looking at the 50. It hasn't broken through there yet. How about the industrial powerhouse that we know as DuPont? Similar problems. Caterpillar has made a ton of money over the last several decades selling massive equipment to where else but China, trying to come out of, you know, a really undeveloped country through industrialization at record pace into a technology economy. But Caterpillar suffering, and Dow Holdings, which we used to know as Dow Chemical, is in a similar plight. All of these major underpinnings of the economy have been turning down for weeks to a couple of months. Now, Alcoa, ticker AA, and JP Morgan, ticker JPM, they're headed down, but they haven't quite broken through the 50 moving average yet. And as long as they stay above there, maybe there's a little bit of hope. But the issue is, in your portfolio, are you broadly diversified? If so, that's a mistake, because that means you're hanging on to these things that are anchors in your portfolio. And most of you have probably been out on the boat at some time, and when you want to go someplace, do you leave your anchor in the water? Heavens to Murgatroyd. Who would do that?
Not if you're trying to make headway, and those are all major contributors to the very front end of the of economic growth. And when they are struggling, that means no matter what's going on out there in stock prices, that in the economy, there's some underlying weakness, and it's time to really pay attention to what's going on out there, because that can spread quickly, and you don't know when, and you don't know where. So it's a heads up. You know, stay alert, and it's really a time to be engaged here. This is not a market to go to sleep on.
So that begs, what do you do when you're dealing with tech doing well on one side and these core industries that are essential for economic survival, and they're headed into the tank? Well, the standard process is, well, we own some of those. Those are value stocks. And then we own some tech. Those are growth stocks. And it's kind of like the old ships that I think it was the Greeks or the Romans, where they had sails and then they had a couple of decks below of slaves who had oars. And if the wind was blowing, that helped. And if the wind wasn't blowing, they rowed. So it was kind of based on conditions. But the fact
that means there's a lot of guys on those ships praying for wind. So
yeah, that's certainly true. And I forget the name of those ships. I mean,
there is a name. You're correct. Yeah.
But it slips your mind too, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
But the economy is like that. There's sometimes the wind's blowing, sometimes it's not. And the question is your portfolio structured so that you own a little bit of stuff for good weather and bad weather? Well, when there's bad weather, why don't you just get out of the weather, get out of the storm? And that's not what most people do. Most people say, I'm going to keep my raincoat on even when the sun's out, because when the rain does start, I'll be ready for it. That is another way to look at modern portfolio theory.
That's exactly what it is. It's saying we're going to be ready for everything all the time by actually being ready for nothing as far as opportunity goes, because we're going to buy all this stuff. And if it's losing money, it doesn't matter. We're keeping that attached to our portfolio. We're going to keep that anchor firmly attached, even though we're trying to make progress. And that's the way it works. That's the way that pie chart portfolio is supposed to work. There's always supposed to be things in there losing money. And we just don't subscribe to that. We think we can do better than that.
So part of the reason that people do that is because that's what their financial advisor or their financial website is basically structured to tell them. How do you build a portfolio that makes sense for today's world? By looking over the last century and saying, on average, it all works out in the end. So I had a conversation this last week with an individual who had been in to see me about, what do I do with all this cash that I've been hanging on to for nearly 2 years? I'm afraid to get in the market because it doesn't make any sense to me.
And that's a good problem to have. That's a good problem to have all that kind of money. Let's get to that, Don, right when we get back. Let's leave that as a little teaser. We're going to get back to what we do with that money after we come back. I'd like to remind you that we do a monthly webinar, Stock Market Update. Our next one's coming up Saturday, August 7th, 9:15 in the morning. You can register for that by going to IRIradio.com. That is IRIRadio.com. Just head to the webinar page, give the registration link a click, and you will get an email back with a link in it. And on August 7th, you just click that link. You will be live online with us. You'll be able to see our charts, get a good look at what we're thinking about the market, what we are looking at out there. And we always have plenty of time for your questions, anything about the market, anything about the economy, or anything about specific securities that either are in your portfolio and you're wondering if they still should be, or maybe something you're thinking about adding. It's a really good time to get a second opinion. So again, go to IRIRadio.com, head to the webinar page, and click that registration link. You are listening to Investor Resources here on AM 770 KTTH. Stay with us. We will be right back.
Live and local, you're listening to Investor Resources. This is your opportunity to call in and have your questions answered. The lines are open at 1-800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Or email your question to help at IRIRadio.com. Don and Perry will be right back.
I beg your pardon. I never promised you a rose garden along with the sunshine. There's gotta be.
Well, that's the way the market's been this last week and a half. Some flowers blooming here in the latter part of it, but a lot of thorns in the prior week. It's a sticky proposition to be in the market and just assume that averages are going to take care of you. But that is what most investors do, because that's what most financial advisors tell them. Well, that's the way we do things around here. Well, and that's true. That is the standard best practices in the industry. Not because it is the best way to make money in your portfolio, but it is the best way as a company to defend yourself in court if somebody sues you, which is the primary reason for using modern portfolio theory. Even the guy that got the Nobel Prize for it has said, he's on record, that the way the industry uses his theory is incorrect. But do not worry about that. It works in court. It keeps them from paying money.
That doesn't mean it works in your portfolio. That's the problem. And that's the reason we abandoned that process. There's nothing in there to protect your capital. And there's nothing in there to give you an idea about where your money should be deployed. It's just be generally diversified and forget about it. That's all it is. And the only safety in that process is extremely long periods of time. There's nothing else. There's no safety built into it at all. And that's why we do not do that anymore.
So we've been through some wacky days over the last couple of weeks, and looking back over our shoulder, which in the industry is called hindsight bias, which is documented normal psychological process. We want to know how things have worked in the past. And if it's made money in the past, got to be good now. Ain't necessarily so, folks, because this is a different world. One, this is a global economy. It is not an economy of isolated countries, with many of which didn't even have stock markets, but we still did global trade. We had a lot more autocratic governments in the past. That's a different world. We still have them today, but they're not as common. So when we turn around and take a look at investment returns, what on earth does the 1950s have to do with today's world?
Now, that's a good question. But in the pie chart portfolio, the returns of 1950 are just one more data point, and they are equally as important as what happened in 2020. They are weighted the same. It's 1 year over the history that we're looking at. They are all contributing equally to where your money is invested today, to where the asset allocation model heads, and those past years have nothing to do with what's going on in the market today. They've got no place in your portfolio, and yet they're just as important as what happened just last year in that pie chart portfolio. Again, that's why we don't do that anymore. It just does not make any sense.
So basically what you need is a process that recognizes the rules for investing from Warren Buffett, the Sage of Omaha. He has two key rules that everyone should follow. Rule one, don't lose money. Rule two, don't forget rule one.
It's a short list. Yeah, it's good, though. So
most everybody can remember those two rules. However, in the standard investment portfolio structure, those rules are ignored. Because when the market goes down 50% and you're down 35%, the response about, you know, how did that happen? I thought you were going to protect my account. I mean, I can't afford to lose that kind of money. Don't worry. The market always goes up. You know, you'll recover. Just, you know, hold tight. You're in here for the long haul. Well, you are in here for the long haul, but not if your money collapses and disappears. You can't afford to lose large amounts of money when the market goes down.
And they'll count that as a win. If the market's down 50% and they're down 35%, that's a win. Well, we're not down as bad as the market is. Look at that. You only lost a third of the money you spent your entire life saving. That's pretty good, don't you think? Well, the answer is no. We don't think that's pretty good.
In addition to our client portfolios, we run five risk-managed models for our corporate 401k clients, where we build the menu for the participants, and we run five models for them to apply as they choose in their account. Every one of our client and individual and our 401k models, there's five of those, all of them were in cash last year when the market was crashing. Not because we knew the market was going to crash.
Right, right.
But because the components in those portfolios were deteriorating. And rule one is don't lose money. And if it's not working, get rid of it. Hanging on to an anchor while you throw it overboard is not good policy. You will not survive that.
Now, and that's it's one of the oldest truths just in life. If you want to know the truth of what's going on, follow the money. Follow the money, and we can look at cash flows and say, you know what, this area of the market is collecting money like crazy. That's a strong part of the market to be in, and the opposite of that is also true. Look, everyone's leaving here. The cash is pouring out. These securities are dropping. That's a place not to be, and it really is that simple. That's what we're doing. We're looking for the strength in the market. We want to be there, and we're identifying the weak parts of the market, and we don't want to be there. that combination gives you the biggest chance of being correct most of the time.
So when I mentioned being in cash, if you'd like to know what happened to those portfolios, we prepare a monthly update for our 401k participants so they can see what happens with each model and keep track of how they're doing with it. And if you'd like a copy of that report, I mean, we send it out to all of the participants in the 401k funds. We don't even know who they all are individually because we work for the company's trustees. But we'll share that report. If you'd like to know what difference it makes to be able to miss a major downturn in the market and how much better off you are, send us an email, help@iriradio.com. Put 401k report in the subject line, first and last name in the body of the email, and we'll be glad to send it to you. Then if you have any questions, you can give us a call or send us an email back. It's a freebie, but it will be educational for you. It's a different way to look at things. Now, what I said a moment ago was that we missed that market downturn. That's not the first time we've done that. That's process. We have a process to step aside from major collapse in the market. So almost everybody knows you're supposed to buy low and sell high. But in order to make that actually work in real life, you have to be willing to sell high when danger shows up. So you'll have cash to buy back at lower prices after the disaster has hit the market. And if you talk to your financial advisor, and they'll say, that's just luck. No, it's not. It's a repeatable process, and we'd be glad to talk to you about it. It's a repeatable process. Now, reason advisor says don't do that is because, one, they don't have a process to do that, and, two, they're going to tell you something that is absolutely true, but it's not the whole truth. It is true that if you're in cash at the bottom of the market, you are going to miss out on what are typically the best days in the market. And they're absolutely right. Now, as a follow-up, nobody ever asks, but what happens if I miss out on the worst days of the market? Now, this is back to Warren Buffett's rule one, don't lose money. It's a whole lot more important to not lose money in the worst days than it is to miss out on a couple of really big days at the absolute bottom. It's like being at the bottom of the Pacific Trench.
The biggest days in the market always come during a downturn. That's when they pop up. So you have to have held on through the downside to get those single big days up for the upside. But all in all, you're still losing money. It doesn't make any sense to be doing that. It's better to be out of there and waiting for the dust to settle and then re-enter the market when the money does. Wait for the cash flows to return. Follow the market back up. And that's the way we do it. And it's... You know, it's not rocket science, and we always tell people, if you want to watch this, you can do it yourself. We can tell you exactly what software to get, and you can go do it. It's a matter of someone has to pay attention all the time, and there's got to be somebody ready and willing to make the decision that we need to do something right now. And that's the biggest difference. There is no sell discipline in the pie chart portfolio. They're never ready to sell anything. They'll hang on forever. It doesn't matter to them. And we think it's more important to preserve that capital. That's how you build wealth going forward.
And that's one of the things we show you in our monthly webinars. And that is, this is our software. This is how we're making decisions. And if you want to do that, software is not expensive. It is not that hard. This is not rocket science. But as you just said, Perry, somebody must pay attention and somebody must have the discipline to actually act when the data says, no more. I mean, we're done here, and either step aside to cash or find that leadership has rotated someplace else and you need to swap boats or cars or whatever you're using to get from point A to point B. If you're in a car and it wrecks, you change cars. I mean, that's how you get to your destination. And that's the same basic thing that has to happen in the market. Professional money managers only sit and hold the same stuff year after year after year because in their investment policy, they're not allowed to sell it. They may sell some of it, but they're stuck with it and they can't go to cash. That's not their job. You need an investment policy that actually says you can do both. You can be fully invested in stocks, maybe international, maybe domestic, maybe fully invested in bonds. If bonds are the place to be because they're protecting capital and you're getting a little bit of interest, but stocks aren't doing well, then maybe you should be owning more bonds, but not for the long haul, not forever, certainly not more just because you're older.
No, that's the worst reason. And nothing in our portfolio is there for keeps. It's only there as long as it's doing its job. It's increasing value. That's why we all do this. We do this to increase the value of our investment portfolio. If it's not helping us do that, we're going to get rid of it. And that only makes sense. You're going to give things a certain amount of room to bounce around. But when a trend sets in and it's a downtrend, it's time to go. It's not time to hang on. And it's time for us to get to the end of our bottom of the hour break here. Well, I'd like to remind everyone again, we do have a webinar coming up on August 7th, Saturday, 9:15 in the morning, and you can register for that at iriradio.com. Also, if you're not getting our Week in Review, which is a weekly email newsletter with a look at everything that's transpired this week, and it's a good look at things that are important and things that you may have heard about that you can probably safely ignore. If you'd like to start receiving that, just send us an email, help@iriradio.com. That is help@iriradio.com. Just put Week in Review in the subject line, and then we need your first and last name, and we'll get you signed up for that, and you will be receiving that starting this Monday. If you have questions for us today, we'd love to talk to you about anything to do with investing or securities, specific securities, or the economy in general. Give us a call, 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Stay with us. We will be right back.
You're listening to Investor Resources. Check out our website at iriradio.com and log on for a free report. That's iriradio.com. Don and Perry are waiting to answer your questions now at 1-800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770.
Hey, well, all right, sir. Here we go there. What are they going to give for? I've been $600 down here now, $10 and now, $25 and now, $35 and now, $50 and now, $60. Will you give me $60 now, $75, $75, another $85 on the bottom there?
Well, the floor traders in New York Stock Exchange are gone. It's all technology, but it's still an auction market. It's just that the computers are handling the matching of the buyers and the sellers. And when there are few buyers in the marketplace, then anybody who wants to sell just has to take the next best price they can get. And one thing leads to another, and we get a week of selling like we had that started on the 13th of the month, ran through Monday. One thing investors can't know, and neither can professional investors, and that is what the future holds. There are a lot of people who say, well, over the next 3 years, you buy this now, and we believe that over the next 5 to 10 years, this is going to be a home run.
That's and how you know it's a total bet. We believe this might happen. It's like run away from those if you get a chance.
Yeah, no, but nobody knows. And that's too often that's a mistake that investors make, is assuming that they know how a company is going to operate, how it is going to do in what is remains to be unknown competition in the days, years ahead. One of those companies that does really, really well at banking the cash happens to be one of the world's largest bond fund managers. Now, you don't even think about this, but in technology, there is a company which many people love. They love their product. They have been trendsetters, and all they do is bank money. It's called Apple. Everybody's heard of Apple, the iPhone, the iPad, the iPod, which who hasn't heard of Apple? Well, Apple banks so much money from all the stuff they sell, they don't know what to do with it all.
What a problem to have, right? We're just doing too well. We don't know what to do.
So they end up having a massive bond portfolio. Now, why do I mention bonds? Well, bonds are in almost everybody's account. And Apple has a ton of them. In fact, between their cash and their bond portfolio, if they sold it, if they could sell it, which would be difficult, but assuming that they could convert it into cash, how many of the S&P 500 companies could they actually buy outright? 460. It would make it the S&P 40 instead of 500.
That is amazing. That's just an amazing number. That's the S&P 500. So that's 500 of the largest corporations in America. And Apple could purchase them outright, 460 strong. That's just amazing.
Now, Apple, I don't think Apple's going away. This isn't a recommendation to buy or sell Apple. It's just interesting data about it. However, from a professional money management side, we look and see what are institutional firms doing with Apple stock. In days past, they have been heavy owners of the stock. But as the price has continued to rise into almost stratospheric numbers, institutions have been systematically unwinding their position from something that I think was approaching 90% of institutional ownership. It's now down to 55.9.
Well, our buddy, Warren Buffett at Berkshire Hathaway, they're a big owner of Apple. Warren Buffett has said outright, well, I think Apple's the best run corporation on earth, and I want to own a bunch of it. And he had what would have been worth $146 billion worth of Apple, and he's cut that. But it's cut to $128 billion. So he has a rather substantial piece of Apple still in the Berkshire Hathaway portfolio.
But can they maintain the growth rate? That's the issue that we have to address with regard to the entire market. We had a phenomenal growth last year coming out of the deepest valley we've been in since 2009. Rapid growth. Can you continue that growth rate? And the consensus seems to be that ain't going to happen.
Everybody's growth. Starting to get, they're so big. Yeah, they are so well integrated into the economies of so many countries that the rapid growth rate days may be behind them until the next great I've got to buy it item comes up. And no one is sure if that's even on the horizon at this point. So no one really sees where this kind of growth could continue, where it could come from.
So institutional managers just been reducing their exposures. Not that they don't want to own it because it's part of key indices and they have to own those. So that's okay. But having the same kind of overweighted exposure, yeah, not so much anymore. It makes more sense to go buy other opportunities that are more fairly priced on a value standpoint. But that's the whole problem with the market today, that the growth rate going forward is not going to be what it was last year. So the earnings season that we're in right now, which is just massively unexpected earnings reports in excess of anticipated levels, that's not likely to continue very long. So what I guess it was on our other show this last month, we talked about the wealthy investors today are expecting their stock portfolios will generate a 17% annual return. That, ladies and gentlemen, is not realistic.
It's not going to happen. And we don't, you know, where does that number come from? It comes from overly optimistically looking at what's going on. And you're looking at the economy emerging right now from being closed, essentially. And we've got people with plenty of stimulus money, plenty of time, and they're at plenty of pent-up buying desire, and now they're being turned loose. Yeah, we're going to have a lot of consumers out there consuming, but it can't be a sustained run. This is going to peak, and then it's going to go back to something approaching normal.
So the San Francisco Fed hired some academics to analyze what should happen. What's the reasonable expectation for consumer behavior after a pandemic? Now, there are not a lot of pandemics to go back and look at.
Right.
We did have the Great Depression. There have been a couple of depression eras. So the conclusion of these academics and the report published by the Fed, San Francisco Fed, was that don't expect them to go spend all their money. Their attitudes have changed. They've been damaged psychologically by not being well prepared for bad news. So one of the things that the government wanted to see happen by giving out all the payroll support and the extra unemployment benefits and extending those is, here's money, go spend it, keep our economy going. And a lot of people said, well, I may spend a little bit, but I don't have much in savings and I have too much credit card debt. I'm going to pay down debt, build up savings, and then I'll spend a little bit of this money. That's not what the government wanted to have happen. That's not what the Fed wanted to have happen. People being fiscally responsible with all this extra cash.
Completely unexpected move there. Yeah. So what do you mean you're going to pay down debt and save some of this? That's not, we didn't see that coming at all.
So growth rate is going to come down. And when that happens, at some point in time, we have to say, where are the profits coming from that's going to keep this ball rolling? We don't know. Is there another bear market in our future? Yes, there is. When is it? We have absolutely no idea. But human behavior being what it is, there will be some catalyst sometime in our future that takes the market back into a protracted or at least deep selling period. Are you prepared for that? Do you have an investment policy that adapts your portfolio to actually protecting capital when the market falls apart?
You have to have that, in our opinion. And the last thing you want to do is to have a bear market set in, have a significant drawdown out there begin to happen, and you start to panic. You start, oh, no, this is not in my investment plan. It never is. What am I going to do? What should I do? And that's when panic sets in. That's when you start making very bad decisions. Anytime you're acting out of fear, you're almost always going to make a decision that's not in your own best interest, which is why we've got, you know, a set of rules that we run our portfolio by. So when that occurs, we already know what we're going to do. So we can just look at the best way to execute that and not wonder at that point during a crisis, what are we supposed to do here? We can act on it instead of wondering how to act on it. It makes all the difference in the world.
You want to know how that works? We actually have a video on our website. Go to iriradio.com, click on the video tab, and then scroll down to January of this year. In that video, we walk you month by month through last year's pandemic, how and why we exited the market, and how and why we got back in. Two things that your normal financial advisors say, you can't do that. One, you don't know that it's going to collapse. That's true. We did not know. All we knew is that we saw the things in our portfolio deteriorating. And rule one from Warren Buffett is don't lose money. So we protected capital. And while we're protecting capital, the market got worse and worse. It got so sick, it fell apart. But we didn't own it. None of our clients owned the market while it was falling apart. Well, then, If you were lucky enough to get out of the market, your financial advisor will tell you, you'll never make the decision to get back in, because at the bottom of the market, you'll be too scared. And after all, it was just luck getting you out. You won't be lucky getting back in. Well, that's because we don't use luck. We use process. We have rules. And when you see possible ownership items, securities, starting to recover, and they recover some more, well, the rules say you own stuff that's going up, and these are going up, and they're going up at the bottom of the market while stuff is cheap. So buy low, sell high requires that you sell high so you can buy low, and that's exactly what our processes did last year, and they've done it previously. And we can talk about that if you want to discuss those things, we'll show you how. But that video in January, go to iriradio.com, go to the video tab, and scroll down to the January one and watch that.
It is quite enlightening. It really will give you a good picture of how we do this, and that it it's doable, it's repeatable. That's the important part. We don't have to bank on just getting it right one time. We have a great deal of confidence to follow the process, and over time we're going to be in a better position than if we were just doing the pie chart buy and hold, which is just not good enough. It just doesn't perform, especially in a down market. We are up against our last break here. We have to get out of here for a quick second. If you have questions during the week, Don and I'd be happy to talk to you. You can give us a call at the office, 800-317-9119. It's 800-317-9119. And if you'd like to get your call on the board here in the last segment, feel free to give us a call. We'd love to talk to you at 800-465-8770. It's 800-465-8770. Stay with us. We will be right back.
This is Investor Resources, the program that sheds new light on your investment strategies. The lines are open at 1-800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Or email your question to help at irradio.com. That's help at irradio.com. Don and Perry will be right back.
Well, that bump is take it higher, and that's what everybody wants it to do as far as the stock market is concerned. And the indices set a new high. But what's really interesting about this, everybody assumes that the market is healthy because the indices have continued to set an amazing number of new highs over the last year. Prior to the pandemic, the indices were working their way up over the previous several years, driven mostly by 10 stocks, because the whole market was not following. The whole market was really suffering and going through a period of significant correction. It was masked by stock buyback activity. Companies were using their cash to buy back their own stock to keep the prices propped up. Not that it wasn't, because it would affect corporate bonuses at year-end.
That never hurts anything either, sure.
Yeah, so we wouldn't do it for that reason. Until the pandemic came and all of a sudden they're short on cash and they go to the federal government and say, go hit up the taxpayers and give us some money so we can stay in business.
Which was a very odd thing. They just spent literally billions and billions of dollars buying back their own stock, and then went straight to the government to say, "Hey, we need a bailout. We're out of money."
Yeah, we're capitalists. As long as the government keeps giving us cash, but we're back in the kind of same situation where, while the broad market is getting better, that is the case. It is healing, but it's got a lot to heal from the last several years.
Indeed. Sure.
There are basically five stocks that are keeping the indices looking healthy. So what is your real risk exposure? It's probably much greater than you think. And particularly if you are a big bond holder, because you are older and your financial advisor or your website has said, well, you know, Joe, you are getting older and you shouldn't have that much risk, so we should change you from 60% stocks to 35% and put more bonds in your portfolio.
And think about that for a second. Think about that from 40,000 feet for just a second. They are making a substantial change in your investment portfolio based purely on your age. They're not looking at what's going on in the stock market. They're not looking at what's going on in the bond market. They're only looking at your birthday. And they're making a huge change in your portfolio based on that. That makes no sense. I mean, that seems incredibly dangerous. That's like astrology. And here we go. We're going to change your portfolio based on your birthday, not something that we believe in.
So part of that is you need to understand how bonds work with interest rates. So that recommendation, using long-term averages, assumes that your bond portfolio will generate somewhere between 5.5% and 7% historically average returns. So how do you get, let's call it a 6% number, when the 10-year is paying 1.25%? Well, the only way that happens is that interest rates have to fall even further than they have over the last 35 years. They've fallen 90%, 95%. And you increase your bond allocation, you're assuming that interest rates will continue to fall another 90-95% over the next three decades. And then that's going to be a benefit. Do you think that's likely, from 1.25% to fall another 90%, and that's going to benefit your stock, your bond portfolio, and that's your safety valve if the market tanks?
That's the safety,
bond,
yeah.
If bond rates rise, they damage your bond portfolio, and there's a strong argument that bonds are actually riskier today than stocks that are overpriced. Which one do you do, and how do you manage that risk if you're just going to buy and hold and hang on and just pray that it comes back someday?
Doesn't make any sense. And it's like I said, it doesn't make any sense to make that decision based on your birthday. It doesn't make any sense to make that decision to buy bonds based on the past 30 years of history. We don't live in the last 30 years. We live what's going on right now. And right now, nothing says bonds are going to be able to return back to that 5-7% level. It's just not going to happen right now.
Well, we know the Fed doesn't want to raise interest rates. They've been doing everything they can to avoid raising interest rates because that would slow the economy down, and it's just kind of getting started. It kind of reminds me of, I had some guys doing some yard work for me, and one of the things they were doing was chipping up the stuff, all the prunings of some past several months in out of the compost pile and chip it up so it works better. They had to start up my chipper. You know, it hadn't started up in a while.
To dust that baby off, yeah.
it blew a lot of smoke, and it didn't sound real good. Yeah, took a while to get warmed up, and that's kind of like our economy. It, you know, if it was my chipper, it would... It's going to take a bit before the thing's running smoothly, and that may be another couple of years for us to get things worked out with the virus. And that's part of the problem of the concerns that investors have. The virus is not getting resolved, particularly in international markets and especially in emerging markets.
Yep.
And we have the variants that are popping up here, and various levels of government authority are deciding or debating whether or not they're going to do lockdowns. Many places are already starting mandated masks again. If they lock down the economies, that startup sound is going to die off real fast.
There is no recovery in that point. At that point, that's right. Everything just closes again, and we're in for another tough bit of sledding. And let's hope that does not happen.
So all of this is happening while we are in the midst of the summer doldrums, anyway, which is just a little bit more uncertainty. Are better days ahead for the United States of America? The answer has always been yes, they are. Does it mean they come easily? No, we have to work our way through it.
No chance is it going to be easy, but better days are ahead of us. That's one of the reasons people invest in the stock market. Everybody's optimistic about, hey, things are going to get better and not get worse. And so that's why we're there in the first place.
So almost everybody's looking for an easy way to be in the market. Make money, don't lose it. And one of those long-standing buy signals is high dividend payouts, and particularly when dividend payouts are more than 1% in excess of the 10-year bond, that is considered to be great opportunity. And in fact, it has been twice.
It is a signal, but it doesn't really flash very often.
That's true. So given 100 years of stock market history, dividends have been paid during most of those years. The actual dividend opportunity buy signal occurred at the bottom of the great financial collapse, so it should have been March of 2009, and coincidentally, March of last year. Other than that, this cult classic signal is not very reliable. It does mean you can get a payout greater than the stock market. Even in today's world, that's true. But
greater than the bond market.
Greater than bond market. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. But if you're going to buy dividend stocks, there's a couple of rules. One, you want to be sure you're buying with a company that raises its dividend systematically, preferably every year. If it's not every year, every other year. At least no more than every 5 years, but it has to happen like clockwork. And the first time the board of directors does not do the expected rise in the dividend, sell that because you own a turkey. The board of directors knows something that they have not yet had to disclose. When they do, that stock is going to crash.
They would never not increase that dividend for no reason. So there's something coming, and they know what it is. So they've either cut the dividend or not increased it. You don't want to still own that when you find out what it is. You want to go before that happens. So if you see that, move on.
Yeah, I have personal experience here with Philip Morris back in the 90s. Year after year after year after year, for decades, they had raised their dividend. Of course, people continue to smoke all the time, so they had plenty of money.
It was fine then, yeah.
And then came the lawsuits. And in 1 year, and I don't remember if it was 91 or 92, they did not raise it. It was a $2 dividend on the stock. It was a phenomenal cash flow return on that. I did not know this rule. So I held on to the stock in our client portfolios. That was a mistake. The following year, they cut the dividend from $2, I think, to 15 cents.
That's less.
Thank you. That is less. And, of course, the stock price followed right along with it.
You bet.
So dividends, they make sense. They're okay, but they should be an add-on to actually how you have your portfolio structured. You need rules for that. We have rules for that. You won't go to our website, irradio.com. Watch the videos. Every one of them is different. Every one of them is educational. You will learn more about the stock market than talking to your financial advisor. We are out of time. Lord willing, we'll be back next week. God bless you, and God bless the United States of America, the greatest country God ever gave a people. Thanks for your time. Look forward to talking with you. You can call us at 800-317-9119 and take up our time. We'll be glad to answer your questions. One